Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Maggie Mooney-Seuss. You may begin.
Good morning, everyone. As the operator told you, my name is Maggie Mooney-Seuss. I am the Communications Program Manager with the Alaska Fisheries Science Center. That's NOAA Fisheries in the U.S. Thank you all for joining us today to hear about ongoing efforts by Fisheries and Oceans Canada, or DFO, the Vancouver Aquarium and Oceanwide, also Oceanwide, and NOAA Fisheries to monitor the condition of a gray whale off the coast of Vancouver Island, British Columbia. The gray whale appears to have developed an infection around the site of a satellite tag several months after being tagged during a U.S.-led research study off the coast of Washington. When last observed, the animal was behaving normally and was generally healthy. Over the next hour, we'll provide you with details about this evolving situation and provide an opportunity for members of the media to ask questions. As this is a media call, we ask that anyone else listening in on the call please refrain from asking questions at this time, but please feel free to follow up after the call with any specific questions you may have, and we'll certainly address those. Following some brief opening remarks by NOAA Fisheries and DFO, we'll have a moderated Q&A. During that time, the operator or I will prompt you to get in a queue to ask your question by hitting star 1 on your telephone. When it is your turn to ask a question, the operator will open your phone line. We ask that you limit your questions to one at a time so that everyone has a chance to ask at least one question, and then you can get back in the queue. First up will be Dr. Sharon Moline from NOAA Fisheries. She's going to provide an overview of the tagging research and the initial steps taken to monitor this whale. Then I'll introduce Dr. Paul Cottrell, with the Marine Mammal. He's the Marine Mammal Coordinator with Fisheries and Ocean Canada, who has actually been out on the water, and he can provide an update on the whale's condition. We're also fortunate to have with us today on the call a number of technical experts, including Dr. Alex Zerbini. He's a NOAA Fisheries affiliate with the University of Washington Cooperative Institute for Climate and Ocean Studies. He's a world-renowned expert on tagging, and he actually led NOAA Fisheries permitted tagging study. We also have Dr. Martin Helena. He's a veterinarian with the Vancouver Aquarium and Marine Mammal Rescue, who assisted DFO in successfully administering antibiotics to the whale at the end of March and early April. We also have Dr. Francis Gullin. Dr. Gullin is a veterinarian with the University of California, Davis, who conducted a clinical assessment of the whale on March 24th for NOAA Fisheries. Dr. Stephen Rafferty, he's a veterinary pathologist, the Animal Health Center, British Columbia Ministry of Agriculture, and the University of British Columbia. Dr. Rafferty is analyzing breath samples taken from the whale to see if we can learn more about what's going on with it. And last but not least, Dr. Brian Fadley with NOAA Fisheries. He can share more on the expert panel that NOAA Fisheries established to evaluate information images collected to help assess this whale's condition and to make recommendations on the response. Now I'd like to turn things over to Dr. Moline to begin. Sharon?
Thank you, Maggie, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. As Maggie said, we just would like to share some information on the condition of one of our satellite-tagged gray whales that was tagged off the coast of Washington on the 8th of September in 2020, and then we'll talk about the effort that we've made to monitor its welfare. So before I provide some background on the tagging, I wanted to thank our Canadian colleagues from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada and Vancouver Aquarium for their actions since we first detected a potential issue with this whale in mid-March when it was feeding off the west coast of Vancouver Island, British Columbia. So a little background on satellite tagging project. Under the U.S. Marine Mammal Protection Act and the Endangered Species Act, NOAA Fisheries is required to monitor and collect scientific data and information to support management, recovery, and protection of whales and other marine mammal populations Satellite tags are an important part of this effort. They help us collect continuous long-term data on whale migrations, behavior, and habitat use. And this is especially important for species that inhabit remote or inhospitable areas where human access is limited. There are a few ways in which satellite data help us to better protect marine mammals. One is by identifying new feeding or breeding areas for protection, identifying areas where human activities and whales overlap, understanding their actions like ship strikes, and determining the fate of stranded and rescued animals post-release, and lots of other uses of them as well. The focus of our call today is the satellite-tagged gray whale from the eastern North Pacific gray whale population. This population has fully recovered from the whaling era and was taken off the U.S. Endangered Species List in 1994. It now numbers around 20,000. It's a healthy, robust population. Most of this population migrates along the west coast of North America from wintering and calving areas off the coast of Baja California, Mexico, to summer feeding grounds in the northern Bering and Chukchi Seas. However, a small group of whales, about 250, comprise the Pacific Coast Feeding Group, or the PCFG, which does not make the long northern migration, but rather remains in feeding areas off the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia, Canada, from June through October. Our satellite tagging research project goal was to learn more about this group of whales. In September 2020, researchers with NOAA Fisheries Satellite tagged a PCFG gray whale off the coast of Washington, part of a pilot study to better understand the late season habitat use and movement of this unique group of whales. We photographed this particular whale on September 4th prior to tagging. At that time, we determined that the whale was in good condition and was a good candidate for tagging. We only tag whales after we've had a chance to make sure that we think that the risk to the animal is low. On 8th of September, we went back out, found the same whale, and tagged him with an implantable satellite tag. And at that time, the whale was still in good condition when we tagged him. We monitored the whale over the next several months based on satellite locations and collected photographs on September 25th, October 4th, and December 9th. No abnormalities around the tagging site were observed in any of those photographs. The satellite tagging data showed that the whale made multiple trips from Washington to British Columbia, and in all the observations pre- and post-tagging, the whale was behaving and feeding and swimming normally. On March 9th, 189 days after deployment of the tag, a contractor for NOAA Fisheries photographed the whale in Barkley Sound, British Columbia, and reported a lesion around the tagging site and two lesions on the opposite side of the animal. The animal was with other whales and appeared to be in good condition and behaving normally. We submitted the photographs to Dr. Francis Golan, a veterinarian with experience evaluating tagging sites on whales from photographs. And while we were waiting for her report, we reached out to our Canadian colleagues to gather more information on the whale and request their assistance to evaluate the animal's condition, evaluate the lesion around the tag site and the other lesions, and to monitor the whale. After receiving the reports from Dr. Golan and the Canadian colleagues, we convened a panel of U.S. and Canadian whale experts and veterinarians on the 31st of March to evaluate additional photographs and develop a response plan. The consensus of the panel was that the lesion around the tag site was within the range of reaction that would be expected as the body extruded the tag. However, it was unusual compared to other records of whales tagged with similar tags. The panel was concerned about lesions on the opposite side of the whale, but could not determine if these lesions were related to the tagging site. The panel agreed that the lesions did not pose an imminent danger to the animal's health, and the decision was made to continue monitoring the whale, but that no intervention was necessary, aside from what our Canadian colleagues already undertook, which Paul will refer to. We are hopeful that once the satellite tag is extruded, the tissue around the tagging site will heal, but of course we're going to continue to monitor the whale's condition closely and respond as necessary. With that, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Paul Cottrell, from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada, to update you on the whale's condition and the action PDFO and Vancouver Aquarium have taken to monitor and care for the whale while feeding off the British Columbia coast.
Thanks so much, Sharon, and thanks, everybody, for joining the call today. So the DFO Marine Mammal Response Program, we became aware of March 25th, and this has been a huge collaboration with NOAA, to first of all have access to the satellite tag information of where the animal was located. And, of course, as Sharon mentioned, work closely with these groups to assess kind of the actions in terms of what should be considered, and also with these Francis Gullins report and also with our veterinarians that we have in Canada and their colleagues. We were able to get out in the water on March 27th and collect additional high-resolution photographs and drone video. And it was decided under the auspices of Dr. Marty Helena and his colleagues, Dr. Raverty and others, to look at an antibiotic administration of this animal and came up with an appropriate dose and an appropriate antibiotic. And we were able, this was a huge effort between DFO Marine Mammal Response, OceanWise, Marty, and Dr. Raverty to have us on the water for March 31st to then look to administer the antibiotic. And we were able to get three doses in the animal on March 31st and then the final antibiotic dose on April 1st. And in addition to the antibiotic doses on April 1st, we were able to get multiple breath samples of the animal. And those samples were sent to Dr. Raverty for analysis, and he has some preliminary analysis, and there's continuing to analyze the breath samples for bacterial, fungal, and viral pathogens of concern. Our goal is to monitor and assess the animal going forward. The satellite tag information has been amazing. This animal is very active. He's been feeding actively. And there are a number of animals all from Barkley Sound to Brooks Peninsula where this animal has been moving back and forth and making use of the herring spawn that occurred in March. And lots of feeding opportunities. The animal is very active. The weather on the West Coast has made monitoring and assessing difficult with the winds and just the isolation, but we are working to make sure, or our best effort, to get out weekly to monitor and assess and get photographs and monitor the wounds associated with the tagging and also the lesions to document that over time, in which we'll be working with NOAA on that and our colleagues and Marty and Stephen and Dr. Raverty as well. And both Marty Helena will have additional information on the antibiotic and darting, and also Dr. Raverty regarding the blow samples and the preliminary results. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Paul. So if anybody has a question, please hit star one, and then we can get you in a queue to ask those questions. Again, if you can... limit your question to one initially, and then you can always get back in the queue so that we can have others have an opportunity to ask their questions too. And while people are queuing up, again, star one to queue up, you should have, if you received the media advisory, there is a link to a web page that is now available, and that has some video as well as photographs on it. A lot of the information that's already been presented to you is there, but that page will continue to be updated, and we'll try to keep you guys informed of any developments. I do see people queuing up, so operator, and actually, since we aren't taking people's names, if you wouldn't mind giving your name and your affiliation when you ask your question, that would be terrific. So, operator, if you could go ahead and open the first line.
Our first caller is Carla Wilson. Your line is open.
Thank you. This is Carla Wilson from the Times Colonist newspaper in Victoria. Could you tell me how much antibiotic you administered, what kind it is, and how you administer it?
I was
just going to send you to Marty.
The antibiotic that we chose the brand name is Convenia. The generic name is Cefovecin. It's a very long-lasting antibiotic. It's the same antibiotic that we use for J50, the killer whale. A lot of our approach was based on our previous experience with J50 a few years ago, and we reconvened the same team to come up with an appropriate antibiotic. We injected 40 milliliters of a concentrated antibiotic. I believe we concentrated at about 400 milligrams per milliliter, and that was delivered through a CO2-powered rifle in four different darts, 10 milliliters each, using a, sort of the same technique we use when we disentangle sea lions and working with the same team and obviously some skilled boat operating and tracking with our DFO colleagues. I hope that answers your question.
And just so people, because I spoke over him, that was Dr. Martin Helena from Vancouver Aquarium, Oceanwide. Operator, if you could open the line for the next caller, please.
Our next question comes from Linda Mapes. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Linda Mapes from the Seattle Times, and I remember the incident with L95 in 2016, the southern resident whale that died after a dirty tag. If indeed that was the cause of death, could you clarify if that was the cause of death in the incident of L95? And I thought there wasn't going to be any more satellite tagging, or perhaps that was only with regard to southern residents. And finally, do you know if all protocol was followed in the tagging? Was there adequate sanitizing, et cetera?
Linda, thanks for those questions. I think the first part, we'll do our best to answer, sharing to answer some of that, but we don't really have the scientists that were involved in that situation online, so we may not be able to fully answer your first question, but I think we've got Alex on the call, that he can certainly speak to the protocol followed in this situation. So I don't know, Sharon, do you want to take a crack at part of that?
Sure. Thanks, Linda, for the question. In regards to L95, as Maggie mentioned, the team that we have here for you today was not involved in that for the most part. But I'll just make a few comments. One is that each situation when we tag, we use these satellite tags is different, and we never quite know we know that for the most part we can safely tag these animals, which is why we do it. But every individual animal is a little bit different, and you never quite know for sure how they might respond. So we do a lot of monitoring and follow-up, which is why we did all the extra work we did in this case. Some of that was from experiences in the past, but it was also just a standard protocol for us whenever we satellite tag or do any kind of sampling of animals that we think requires us to keep an eye on them afterwards. So in terms of L95, the information that I do have was that it died within 5 weeks of being tagged, and that I believe it's still being looked at, and I don't know any more than that about what the actual cause of death was. And I don't know if the tagging specifically was the cause of death. I will say, to address your other questions about the protocols that were followed, we have a very strict permit requirements, and we also have very strict IPUC review for these procedures. And this went through all of those. And Alex can talk a bit more about the sterilization and the other things. And the last thing I'll mention is that the satellite tagging is not allowed. I think right now it is currently on hold for resident killer whales. Brian Fadley, who's on this call, can answer that question, I think, as part of our IQ chair. But for other whales, it was not held back for other whales.
And actually, before we have Alex respond to the tagging protocol, I don't know if Dr. Rafferty, I think you were involved in L95. Do you have anything that you could share to answer Linda's question about potential cause of death?
Yes, we actually did the animal was identified offshore and was towed to an area that we had access to the carcass in order to complete a necropsy or conduct a postmortem examination. And one of the most striking features was at the base of the dorsal fin, we found two puncture or penetrating wounds that extended quite deep into the underlying blubber. This was interpreted as the tag satellite site. We excised that area and actually undertook x-rays to try and see if there were any residual materials from the tag left. And in fact, there were a couple of barbs or petals, prongs, that were detached from the stem of the tag that were lodged deep within the tissue itself, and associated with these areas, as well as remotely within the lung, we identified large numbers of fungal hyphae. And based on the morphology, we identified mucormycosis, a fungal infection that was likely associated with the tag. As the tag penetrated the skin, the thought is that it would have brought in these fungal elements that colonized the area and then were disseminated through the blood system into the lungs and other organ systems. So in that particular case, we believe it was a fungal infection that ultimately resulted in the loss of the whale. Fungi are certainly a consideration in this case as well. Unfortunately, there's no real way to determine whether it is, there is a fungal infection involved with the site. We were able to have breast samples that were collected by DFO and Marty Helena that were presented to the lab. We do have those on, set up for fungal culture, but it can take anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks in order to, for the fungi to grow. So the status of that won't be known until for at least another 2 weeks.
Alex, I don't know if you want to talk about the protocols that have been developed in prepping for satellite tagging.
Yes, Maggie. Thank you, Linda, for your call. The protocols, as Sharon mentioned, were followed as expected. The tags are sterilized using young sterilization with ethylene oxide. The tags are kept in a sterile environment prior to deployment. All of that was followed in the field prior to deployment. Before the deployment of the tag, we assessed the body condition of the whale and deemed that whale as a good candidate for tagging. So there was no breaching protocol on this, on the tagging of this individual.
Okay, operator, would you be able to open the next line?
Our next question comes from Dawn Gibson. Your line is open.
Hi there, thank you. Yeah, I'm just wondering, I guess, what can you describe a little bit about what the tagging process looks like? And as well, you mentioned that you're shooting kind of darts in them with the antibiotics. Maybe how are these darts staying inside the whale, or what does that look like as well? I guess I'm looking for a little more detail around both processes.
So why don't we start with the tagging question first, and then we'll talk about the antibiotics administering. So Alex, do you want to talk about the tagging process?
Yes. So the tagging process follows international standards established by best practices guidelines. We use the most recent instruments, which underwent rigid testing before they were allowed to deploy in free-ranging animals. As I mentioned before, the tags are sterilized and kept in a sterile environment prior to deployment. When we get into the field, we assess the conditions of the animals. We don't want to tag animals in poor body condition. This individual was in good body condition. We deploy the tags using a pneumatic rifle, and the tags are deployed close to the dorsal midline of the body, which is a region where the likelihood of developing strong reactions or injuries is much lower. So that's pretty much a summary of what how the tagging takes place. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that was part of it. And then the second part of the question was if we could talk about administering the antibiotics. So I think that's Marty.
I apologize. When you just mean how it was delivered through the dart?
You're administering it through darts that are stuck into the body. Do they just fall out eventually, or is it something like that's staying within them forever, or?
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, the darts we use administer the antibiotic very quickly. This particular antibiotic provides antibiotic levels for up to 14 days after a single dose, and it's well absorbed from both the muscular zone as well as kind of the adipose and subcutaneous tissue, and that's why it was chosen. Plus, it provides a spectrum of activity against bacteria that have previously been shown to be a potential problem in whales. So the method of delivery is a dart that's through a carbon dioxide powered rifle. As the dart and the needle on the end of the dart penetrate into the animal that the antibiotic is delivered, we do use about a fairly long needle, about a 10 centimeter long needle, it's 100 millimeters, same thing. And those slip out usually within an hour, but certainly within a day.
Thank you, Marty. Operator, if you can go ahead and we'll take the next question.
Our next question comes from a caller who did not record their name, but your line is open. Go ahead, caller.
Be great if you could let us know who you're with.
My name's Amy Smart. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly, Amy.
Okay, great. I think I was on mute when I recorded my name. I was just wondering, what is the sort of prognosis in terms of when you expect the whale to fully recover? And beyond L95, which obviously was a really severe case, how common are minor infections related to tagging?
I'm going to put that question to Alex to start.
Sorry, I didn't get the first part of the question. Can you repeat that, please?
I believe the question was... Go ahead.
Okay, I was just asking what your prognosis is in terms of when you expect the whale to fully recover, if all goes well.
Oh, I apologize. That's probably not the best question for Alex. I'm not sure if Sharon or wants to tackle that, or Paul. At this point, I think we probably can't answer that question for you. I think we are monitoring the whale, but I'm going to let Sharon elaborate.
I think I would just a couple things, and Alex could probably help with this. So these tags are implantable tags, and they are designed to eventually work their way out of the tissue, and then they just fall out, and then the tissue continues to heal. So once the tag was put into the animal in September, over time it has slowly been migrating out. And so the tags are designed to stay in for weeks to months. They can stay in about an average of 4 months, and maximum time they can be in for over a year. So it could still be in for a bit longer. But it is migrating out, and I think Alex could follow up on this, but I think we thought it was probably about 25% migrated out already, so it's got a little bit more time to kind of work its way out. And I'll just comment that the one good thing about this is that salt water, of course, is a very good is a very good healer. So the hope is that as the tag continues to get pushed out, the site around it will continue to heal. And the other person on the call here who might be really helpful here is Frances Golan, because she has looked at a lot of these tags. So her and Alex together probably could answer your question about sort of how soon we might expect some recovery and how frequently these have happened before.
So Alex, why don't you go next, and then we'll have Frances follow up.
I think Sharon's summary was very good, and I think to speak about prognosis, Frances is more qualified than I am, as she has, she's a veterinarian, but she also has examined the pictures of this individual. So I would just defer to Frances.
Hi, yeah, this is Frances Cullen. I guess the short answer is prognosis it's really hard to say. The real issue with this whale is that the tag site itself is reacting very much as we'd expect a whale to react to these tags. I've been looking at photographs of, over 70 whales that have been tagged in the past, mostly humpback whales, and the tag is slowly rejected by the body over months to years, then that's what we call a foreign body reaction, where it reacts very much as you would to a splinter, and it forms a localized abscess or granulation tissue, and the tag gradually is pushed out of the body with reactive tissue around it. So that typically would take months to years, and the whale usually then heals with a depression in the skin. What's unusual about this whale is that there's a large mark on the other side of the body of the whale, and that's why, you know, we're monitoring the animal closely, and we really don't know what's happening there, so it's hard to give a prognosis without knowing what that mark on the other side of the whale is. So, you know, as vets, we always say common things happen commonly, so you assume that mark has got something to do with the tag because it's a tagged whale, but we really don't know, and it could be something completely different that's affected the whale on the other side. There's a mark right opposite the tag site, but there are also one or two other marks on the whale's body, just kind of often just below the waterline when we look at photographs, and we simply don't know what's causing them. Does that help? So the prognosis as far as tag emergence, I would say that's normal. We're seeing a normal reaction for a tagged whale, and we'd expect it to heal in months to a year or 2 years. But what we don't know what's happening is a lesion, a wound, a mark that's on the opposite side of the whale from the tag site. So we're trying to be as precautionary as possible, and hence the antibiotic treatment by Dr. Helena, and you know, really close monitoring.
Thank you, Frances. I guess the only thing I would add to that, too, is that one thing to keep in mind is that the whale is fairly robust. It's feeding. It's, as Paul pointed out, it is behaving normally and making quite long distance trips up and down the coast of Vancouver Island, which is some good news. And I think with that, we'll take our next question.
Our next question comes from Jeff Lawrence. Your line is open.
Hey there. This is Jeff Lawrence from Czech News in Victoria. I just want to ask a little more about the tag. Is there any concern that because of the infected site that's like you guys might have to actually excise the tag somehow, or are you still just fully expecting it will be extruded, I guess, on its own? And the lesions on the other side opposite the tag site, I know you're saying those are unusual, you're not sure what those is there any even guess as to what else could have caused those? Just any thoughts you have on that? Thank you.
I don't know Ted, I was going to suggest maybe Frances start.
Sure. So for the first part, as to exciting the tag, no. I mean, the body is doing that itself, and to actually do that would mean, you know, somehow restraining the whale, getting your hands on the tag and pulling, which all could result in more damage or harm to the whale than just allowing the natural rejection process to happen. So there's no, at least on my behalf, no thought of trying to do that. And as far as the marks on the other side, it's just a really good question. I wonder about some sort of entanglement or some bites from, you know, we've seen in Southern California, we see shark bites. Offshore, you would see cookie-cutter shark bites, but they're an unusual shape on this animal. The upper part could be, you know, could be a bit of tissue being extruded from the tag site right across the body, but that would be extremely unusual, but it's still possible. So it's a good question, and I wish I knew the answer.
Okay, I think we got quite a few people queuing up, so we're going to take the next question. Operator, if you could open the line for the next caller.
Our next question comes from Linda Mapes. Your line is open.
This is my second question. Has everyone else had their turn?
You can go ahead.
Go ahead. Okay, thanks. So is there any reason to think this animal has an infection, or are you just being extra careful in administering this course of antibiotics?
Paul, do you want to start?
This is probably better suited for Marty
okay.
or Dr. Raverty to answer.
Marty, I can start for sure. There's certainly, as Francis has well described, a localized tissue reaction. It's reasonable to expect that in that reaction with a foreign body that's open, that there is likely some secondary localized bacterial inflammation at this stage. But really the darting is aimed more at trying to prevent something more serious, like a systemic kind of infection. So really, like I say, the treatment of the localized site, that really is going to progress, as Francis says, until that dart has extruded itself. And the antibiotics might help with that a little bit or help the secondary bacteria that has invaded that site. But really, their purpose is to prevent an overwhelming sort of secondary and systemic infection. I hope that makes sense.
Dr. Raverty, did you want to follow up on that?
The only other point to raise is that it has been observed by one of the field biologists that the animal is shuffing or coughing up a little bit of mucus while it's moving, and this may be suggestive of some irritation in the airway, and of course the worst case scenario is that there may be a localized infection there or something else going on, and I think the part of the reason for the antibiotics as well is just to cover off if there may be any underlying respiratory infections as well.
Thank you, Dr. Raverty. Operator, if you could take the next question.
Our next question comes from Carla Wilson. Your line is open.
Could you tell us a bit about the size and depth of the lesions and in each particular case? And also, do you have any information about the age of the whale, the gender, and that kind of thing?
I think maybe we'll start with Marty. I know you've been out there recently and looked at the animal.
I really didn't think this one was for me. I apologize. What would be the question for me?
It was the size of the lesion, the condition of the lesion.
Oh. There's someone already described about 10 centimeters of tag that's extruding from the site. Around that, there's probably a radius of about 20 to 30 centimeters of inflamed tissue that looks, discolored, quite pale. There's a corresponding patch on the opposite side that's about the same diameter. And then there was a sort of a third area, which is the kind of really unknown spot, which was further caudal and ventral, which looked quite fresh and red at one point, but that has since subsided. So we're not sure that has to do anything with the tag, as Francis has previously said. Does that sort of answer your question?
I think that's perfect. There was a second part to that question about what we know about the whale, and I'm going to ask Sharon to answer that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marty.
So for the whale, it's been cited multiple times as a PCFG whale, so we know the animal. We've seen it since 2017, so it is considered part of that special group that hangs out off the coast of Washington and Oregon and British Columbia in the summertime. We don't know the sex of the whale, and it is considered a bit on the smaller. It is an adult whale, but the thought was that it's a bit smaller, so they thought it probably is younger, but we don't actually know how old it is. We don't have, for some of the whales in PCFG, we have photo IDs from the time they're, you know, calves and growing up, but this one was not that case. We didn't see it until it was already growing and larger, so we don't actually know the actual age, but based on its size, we thought it was probably younger. And then it was in very good condition. The photos that we had and the drone imagery that DFO was able to get on the animal showing it feeding, which you guys have access to on the website, is really great footage, but also just shows that he's healthy and so far seems to be behaving normally.
Thanks, Sharon. Operator, if we can take the next question.
Our next question comes from Kelly Bacham-Bartok. Your line is open.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So thank you again, all of you, for the collaboration and the pre-meeting this morning with our Whale Watch community. I just want an update, and then I'll ask a question. We do have a Tofino colleague heading out on Thursday for an all-day, and so they've been alerted and will continue to keep their eyes out for you and coordinate with you. I'm going to ask, though, that based on the map and the tracks that you've provided online for the SAT movements, Chocolate made one brief foray into the Strait of Juan de Fuca in the Souk vicinity early in this tagging round, but is it reasonable to presume this animal is unlikely to be seen in the Salish Sea inland waters? That's my question. Thank you.
I'm going to send that back to Sharon.
Thanks for the question. I think it's unlikely based on other movements that we have on the whale. He tends to, tends to stay kind of out in that outer Washington coast. We did tag it just on the western edge of Juan de Fuca when we tagged it. So it does kind of come in a little bit into the strait there. But I don't think it's likely to come, you know, very far down into the, you know, in much farther probably than what we originally saw it. But as I mentioned, this is kind of a pilot study. We haven't done a lot of tagging of the PCFG whales. This was kind of our first foray into doing that with these whales, and it was exactly that, to try to find out where do they go and how do they use the habitat in the inland waters of Washington, Strait of Juan de Fuca, and even potentially, you know, your waters there in Canada. So that's kind of what we're hoping to find out. So far, he's pretty much remained on the outer coast. We do expect that it will likely turn around and eventually come back down off Washington, probably like June and July, which is kind of normally when he shows up down here.
Thanks, Sharon. Go ahead and take the next caller.
Our next question comes from Linda Mapes. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'd like to be able to explain to people a little bit more about the tagging program. I'm getting the understanding that these tags track the animal as long as they're in place on the animal and then not anymore. So you get data for months, maybe a year, as long as the tag is in place. And what are the benefits of the program? What are some of the breakthroughs or things we've learned from this program? And finally, how big are the tags? What do they look like? A picture would be helpful.
Well, since Alex, I know, has been doing tagging around the world, I'd ask Alex to maybe talk about some of the benefits and discoveries made as a result of tagging. And then he can also answer the questions about the tag itself.
Thank you, Linda, for your question. Yes, I mean, specifically for this program, I think Sharon already mentioned that we were interested in understanding what is the movements and habitat use of this PCFG great whales, especially once, you know, after the summer season ends and the fall progresses and then winter. So tracking those animals in seasons that we have less of an opportunity to observe is important for the management questions that we have to answer. On a more general way, tags are used to detail broad-scale distribution and seasonal movements, habitat use. They've been used to describe migratory destinations and migratory routes. They're used for defining important habitats, especially those that overlap with human activities, for example, ship lanes or areas where fisheries occur. We're getting sights into whale behavior, physical characteristics of its habitat. Again, especially in remote locations where we can't really observe the animals. And they are also important to assess population structure for improving management and conservation, especially for endangered species. So that's kind of the broad description of the utilization of these types of tags. In terms of what the tag looks like, the tag is about almost 11 inches in length and less than an inch in diameter. It weighs about 390 grams, so 14 ounces. The tag, it's the housing of the tag, so the part where the portion of the tag where electronics are cast is made of stainless steel, surgical quality stainless steel. The tags are embedded in the body and are expected to stay there for several weeks to several months, as described before. In gray whales, the average duration of these tags is estimated to be about 4 months, but there are many cases where tags lasted for over a year. Does this answer your question?
It's interesting. Oh, one last thing. How many of these tagged animals do we have out there? How many whales are pulling tags around right now?
So for this specific project, we tagged 3 individuals, and this is the only one that's still transmitting. There are many other research programs going on right now worldwide, and I can't tell you exactly how many whales are tagged right now, but there's many research projects going on with this type of tags.
Okay, I think we'll take the next question, please.
Our next question comes from Jeff Lawrence. Your line is open.
Hey, thanks. This is probably a question for Paul. I just wanted to maybe clarify. I understand that the Eastern North Pacific population is quite robust, as you were saying, but can you sort of clarify, from what I'm looking at, the Committee on the Status of Endangered Wildlife in Canada actually designated this specific feeding group as endangered in 2017. Can you talk a little bit about that and why this was split into its own population to receive that designation? And did that factor into the decision to tag a whale from this population? Thanks.
So that was directed at me. So it was NOAA that tagged the animal, not DFO. So that would be Alex and Sharon to answer the tagging question. In terms of the COSWIC designation in Canada of PCFG, you're right. They've been considered as endangered, and that listing is being considered by Species at Risk Act, which is the legislation around protection of species at risk. And it's due to the small population, the small range, and the fact that this population is, a lot of the work that's going on is further finding out more information about this group of 250 or so whales and their habitat use and use of Washington State and British Columbia coastline, which is being looked at by COSWIC and, of course, by Species at Risk. So it hasn't been listed within SARA, but it's being looked at. So the current listing for gray whales in Canada on the West Coast is Species of Concern, which includes PCFG currently.
Darren, did you want to follow up with that? I think you covered our objectives for our tagging, but maybe elaborate a little bit more on what we hope to learn.
I can cover a little bit of that. And just maybe to help with a little bit of the confusion, in the United States, this group of whales is not considered separate from the larger eastern North Pacific gray whale population. There's been much discussion and lots of study, part of which is what we're doing, is to try to determine that. So we have lots of ways in which we decide that a group deserves its own stock, as we call them. In this case, the Pacific Coast Feeding Group hasn't met those standards yet. So we still consider it part of that larger group of 20,000. So it's just the difference between Canada and our status of the population. And then I think your other question was, I think I forgot your other question. Can you remind me of the second part of that question?
I think it was research objective.
Oh, yes. Well, the research objective part, I think, as we talked about, is mainly to try to understand, because this group is so unique in the fact that it doesn't make the migration like the larger population does. So as I mentioned in our opening remarks, most of the population traveled all the way up to Alaska for its summer breeding in the Bering Sea. But this group of whales doesn't. It stops off our coast and spends its summer feeding there. But some of the things we don't know about it is whether they stay there all year round, which is what's been really interesting about this whale, because clearly it is being basically resident in the PCFG area, which includes British Columbia and Washington and Oregon and Northern California. A lot of the other whales, we thought that they might actually migrate with the rest of the group. So they might just be feeding here in the summertime and then traveling with the rest of the whales down to the breeding grounds in the wintertime for calving and things off Mexico. So those are some of the questions we're trying to ask. And we really, our main data has been photo identification. That's what we have used pretty steadily now for many, many years. We have a photo ID program, but we can't keep track of them. Once they leave and once we get into winter, when we can't go out in vessels and we can't really fly to look for them, we lose track of them. And so the satellite tags are a way for us to find out more about their movements in relation to this larger population, but also just in how they're using our West Coast habitats and to look for, potential threats. Since they are kind of a small group and we consider them unique in their behavior, we want to learn more about them.
Thanks, Sharon. If anybody else has a question, please hit star one and you can get in the queue and we can have you, operator, open your line. Operator, go ahead now. We have one more question.
I show no questions at this time.
Okay. Well, if we don't have any more questions, you have our contact information. You're very welcome to reach out. And as we told you, there's information on the website. There is a video to download, some images. If you need higher resolution images, please feel free to reach out to either DFO, Vancouver Aquarium, or NOAA Fisheries, and we can provide that for you. And if you have any follow-up questions, we'll be available to talk to you. We will keep you in the loop as we learn more, and we appreciate all of you joining us today.